Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Countdown to Kickoff. I am your host, Anthony Denmark, Denmark Like the Country, a.k.a. Copenhagen, a.k.a. Demi. And this episode is brought to you by EatDrinkSleepSports.com. And since sports never stops, since sports never sleeps, that means we always have something to talk about. And since Mace is back, heck, I'm back, you're back, let's go ahead and discuss the latest happenings in the world of college sports. Let's get it. And welcome to Countdown to Kickoff. I'm your host, the one and only Anthony Denmark, Denmark Like the Country. And as usual, since sports never stops, since sports never sleeps, ladies and gentlemen, college football fans of all kinds, shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, religious beliefs, and whatsoever, we always have something to talk about. Of course, today is Tuesday, November 8th. And the College Football Playoff Committee released its new ranking. So, of course, we do know that the biggest question entering into this week two of the rankings that actually do matter, we wanted to know where Washington was going to be at. Of course, after the first ranking, we saw that Washington found itself on the outside looking in. Nevertheless, we see that thanks to Texas A&M slipping up, they now find themselves in the in crowd. Congratulations. Congratulations. However, we do know that there is a team nipping at their heels as Ohio State finds itself ranked number 5. And, of course, you also have Louisville ranked number 6. And, of course, we have a lot of games still left yet to play. And we do know that rankings oftentimes have a tendency to change from week to week. No one expected, no one predicted, no one foresaw Texas A&M losing to Mississippi State was just trying to become bowl eligible, but that happened. And of course, we do know that Washington, although of course they definitely did not get their fair share of respect for playing Rutgers, for playing Portland State, we do know that they find themselves entering into the meat of their schedule, the meat of respectability, and a meat of an opportunity for them to be able to prove, validate, and show the nation that they are more than well-deserving of being ranked in the top 4 and more than well-deserving of being in inclusion with those other teams, Michigan, Clemson, and Alabama, to have an opportunity to contend, challenge, or even win a national championship. But this is only week 2 of the rankings. So, of course, Washington, of course, this week, they face off against USC. Then, of course, then have the Apple Cup against Washington State. And if, in fact, they are oh so fortunate, then they'll find themselves in the Pac-12 championship, possibly facing off against Colorado. So there is an opportunity there for Washington to beat 3 ranked teams. Because USC, based off of the latest ranking, is ranked number 20. Colorado is ranked currently number 12. And Washington State finds itself ranked number 23. So with that in mind, the games are there for Washington to be able to prove, validate, and prove to the nation that they are more than well-deserving. But, of course, as I say in life, as I say in sports, we're definitely going to see what's happening. And, of course, we are also definitely going to see what's up. On tonight's show, we're going to have a guest. He writes for the Pacific Takes to come on and educate us on the Washington Huskies. Because let's be real, ladies and gentlemen, Washington plays late games. And I try to stay awake for their game against Cal. I was able to witness Marshawn Lynch nearly run over the band. We've heard about him in the band before. I was able to watch John Ross show us, remind us of how dynamic this guy is as a receiver. But after the first half, I was done. I was counting sheep. I had to catch the rest of the game much later in the day. So we need to find out, you know, is Washington for real? And to a degree, is the West Coast bias real? Because, you know, last year, let's be real. If Christian McCaffrey from Stanford played on the East Coast, it's more than likely possible that he would have won the Heisman last year. So with these late-night games and the fact that people have a tendency to collapse around 11:30, Washington really hasn't got as many eyes watching them as, of course, those other teams that find themselves playing much earlier in the day. But we're going to find out from Jack Foleman about the Washington Huskies. Are they for real? And his predictions in regards to how they're going to do in their upcoming matchup. Because right now it's put up or shut up for them. And we want to see, you know, are they for real or not. In addition to talking to Jack about Washington, we're also, of course, going to look at the rankings. I'm going to break them down a little bit, break down, right? In addition to that, we're also possibly going to talk about what in the world is going on in Baylor. And is there a possible solution? And then I'm going to mention about retirement, playing golf, and it's all going to come together, you'll see. Because, I mean, that's just a mess that's going on in Baylor. And I really wonder, how did you go about solving it? Because although we do know that it seems as if one man has been punished for these incidents, we do know that at least in most places, not Russia, of course, that one man alone cannot dictate, determine as much as Art Briles has found himself being accused of. And this latest incident that took place in Baylor where the guys were selling Coach Art Briles shirts, also, of course, wearing the black jerseys to honor Art Briles, definitely did not send a good message to the victims of domestic violence. And definitely, you know, is a message that you would think that the university would try to find itself possibly trying to avoid sending such a bad message, especially considering how diabolical the summer, the school year, the season has found itself becoming because of the diabolical mess that has taken place at Baylor. So, yeah, we have a lot of things to talk about on today's show. I'm excited. I hope you're excited. So let's go ahead and see. There he is. So before we talk about Washington, let's go ahead and play what I consider to be the most dynamic play so far of the Week 10 college football season. Go by the name, John Ross.
Go deep again, and they got him again. Ross comes back and gets it blocked. Ross, like a ball, touchdown.
He just runs by.
So without further ado, John, like a ball, let's go ahead and find out what's up with these Huskies. Jack Foleman, he covers the Huskies for Pacific Takes to find out what's happening, what's up. Let's get him on the line. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. I just started, before you came on, I played the audio of John Ross, like a boss, and he definitely did dominate against California almost single-handedly. Of course, he leads the nation in touchdown receptions and one dazzling play after the other. Why they still cover him in man coverage is beyond me. But let's just get right to it. The rankings for the Week 2 came out. What were your thoughts, impressions, and of the rankings?
Yeah, I anticipated Ohio State jumping Washington for another week. So I was a little honestly surprised that they didn't, that the committee went with, you know, the undefeated team over the team that has a loss, but maybe a little bit more of a impressive out-of-conference, you know, arguably in-conference resume. So I definitely think out here in Pac-12 country, it's – it was nice to see, but we still know that Washington's probably going to have to run the table to get into the playoff, and that's just kind of the way it is, and it might probably what's fair in a lot of ways, depending on how it shakes out.
Absolutely. Now, of course, we do know that Washington, of course, definitely did not get a lot of fans regarding its non-conference schedule. Of course, it was not as impressive, although it's good that they did sign on for a kickoff series for 2018 to try to bolster its non-conference schedule. But focusing specifically on this year, they now find themselves in the meat of their schedule. They, of course, have USC, which is ranked number 20, even though they're much better than 20. They, of course, also have Washington State, who is ranked number 23, even though they, too, are much better than being ranked 23. And, of course, possible matchup in the Pac-12 championship against another ranked opponent. When you look at those three games and you compare them with Ohio State, West, Maryland, this other team from Michigan, and, you know, who knows how that game goes out. How do you compare the games that Washington has remaining on the schedule to Ohio State, who, of course, it seems as if really it has a one-game season in Ann Arbor, Michigan?
Yeah, for Ohio State, it's really kind of a, you know, it's almost like a, I would say, a shotgun approach against, you know, like a single huge bullet. Ohio State has that one huge game left against Michigan, but Washington's going to have, if things go the way they're expected, Washington's going to have three really good games to kind of throw up against that one game. And I think that would probably be enough to win out for Washington is, you know, you get USC, you get Washington State, and then you get, you know, either Colorado or Utah again, or probably not USC in the championship game. That's going to be a really, really a strong finish to the season, and enough that if you're undefeated, you run that gauntlet and someone else lost, let's say Ohio State, they lost at Penn State, you're going to have a hard time, you know, saying, you know, this team went undefeated, this team lost the game, and bumping that one lost team up above Washington.
Absolutely. Of course, again, I'm on the line with Jack Fulman. He writes for PacificTakes.com. Now, in looking at the matchup against USC, now, earlier this season, I was probably on the bandwagon of many people saying that Clay Helton had to go. But he's turned USC around. He put the hands in a quarterback who is mobile, not a statue like Max Brown, no offense, and gave the ball to Ronald Jones III, who seems to just been a man possessed, running like crazy. When you look at the Washington defense and the weapons that USC has, I mean, the spread of this game right now is a 10-point spread. What are some of your biggest concerns? Because, I mean, you got Washington definitely did put blowout Cal, but, you know, the game earlier looked kind of closer than it ended.
Yeah, it's going to be a major test for Washington Saturday, and I'm surprised the line has been so high. It started high and has been growing. I've been surprised by that because USC is going to be their biggest test they face on offense, definitely so far this year, maybe all year, especially because if Washington's had a weakness, it's been teams that just line up straight forward and run straight at them, and USC can do that. They have two senior tackles that are as good as any in the country. Then they have a lot of other experience in the interior of that offensive line and a lot of talent too. And they have, Ronald Johnson and our Jones. And he's a game breaker. He's a guy who, if he gets some blocks and, you know, gets loose, he can really score quickly. And then they also have a quarterback who can move now and Sam Darnold. And then their passing game isn't, you know, it's not Cal, but it's, you know, not a slouch either. They have Juju Smith-Schuster. So not only are they balanced, but where they could really hurt Washington, where Washington's weakness lies, they could do that by just, you know, running the ball. And I don't know if they're going to get Justin Davis back or not either. And then if they get him back, that's two running backs they could really run the ball up against Washington with.
Absolutely. Now, of course, this game for me, I look at it as being a lot of dynamic one-on-one matchups. I'm looking forward to seeing John Ross III against Adoree Jackson. I'm looking forward to seeing Sidney Jones, who finally gave up a touchdown, even though his safety came to his defense today and said it was his fault. I'm looking forward to seeing him go up against Juju Smith-Schuster think that this game is going to be won or lost in the trenches. Now, you did mention about Willer and Banner, who, of course, now are playing much better. Willer, of course, is healthy. But the defensive line of Washington were dealt a serious loss as their leading sack artist with 5 sacks was lost for the season. How do you see – do you see that being a big concern, and how do you see – who do you see standing in this place to replace him?
Yeah, it's a really big concern for Washington because they were – early in the season, they were kind of having trouble pressuring quarterbacks. And then Joe Mathis emerged as the guy who was kind of their sack specialist, but also a guy who really – he's big. He's 6'2", 260-ish, could really hold up against the run as well. And when they lost him, they not only lost a lot of their pass rush, they had to insert a guy, Connor O'Brien, who's smaller. I think he's around 6'3", 235, 240. Then see a little bit more of Sam Wuchin, who's another guy of that same size, and it's hurt them. It's been pretty obvious teams have been attacking that spot, that kind of end, the kind of, you know, outside linebacker hybrid spot. And, yeah, that's been a weakness, and I expect USC to go really hard at that. And for Washington, I think they're going to have to do what they did against Cal, which is – and they have the ability to do with how good their secondary is they could, you know – they don't have to sell out too much to the pass because their corners are so good and their safeties are so good, and they can kind of, you know, stack up against a run when they need to. So that's kind of their biggest shot on defense, I think, is, you know, they're really going to have to maybe load the box a little bit more than they would like to and, you know, dare USC to beat their vaunted secondary.
Absolutely. This game definitely promises to be an exciting one. Of course, you know, last week everybody was talking about how Washington was on the outside looking in and, of course, you know, found themselves saying that, you know, maybe they're not deserving. Now entering into this week, they find themselves in the top four, and we saw what happened with Texas A&M. Now we're going to see how Washington responds. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about it. And, again, I want to thank you for coming on to the show because we do know that Washington, of course, the nation, the world is now watching. Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you anytime.
Now, of course, again, the thing that's awesome about college football is that things change from week to week. For all those people out there just shouting and screaming and demanding that there be an expansion of the college football playoffs to 6 or to 8, or in the case of Mike Leach, to 64, you don't realize that every game, every week is a playoff game. Every week provides an opportunity for you to either, one, justify your ranking, or either, two, find yourself as getting exposed. And we saw that happen last week with Texas A&M, and it's going to be a ripe opportunity for several teams to either, one, justify their ranking, or either, two, find themselves getting exposed, like Nebraska. You say, Denmark, why you mention Nebraska? Well, last week in the rankings, of course, Nebraska found itself in the top 10, ranked number 8, and they found themselves losing over 50 points to Ohio State when they only were able to muster up 3 points. Nevertheless, they weren't the only team that got exposed. Nebraska, of course, had a partner. Texas A&M got exposed. And so the exciting thing is when you look at these rankings, you get an opportunity to see who's for real and who's fake. And, you know, when we looked at the rankings last week, I know for myself anyway, I found myself saying Penn State, ranked number 12, get out of here. But 41-14, so maybe they are deserving of being ranked at least in the top 15. But in my opinion, still not in the top 10. But they find themselves number 10 now. And of course, we also saw last week Auburn, of course, found itself almost losing to Zach Cunningham and the Vanderbilt Commodores. Zach Cunningham almost beat Auburn single-handedly by himself. He's the best linebacker in the country that nobody knows, nobody talks about, who, of course, has been terrorizing the SEC and single-handedly winning games. And, unfortunately, he came up short against Auburn. But, nevertheless, Auburn did come out victorious. So, are they deserving of being ranked number 9? I think the jury is really still out. I think it's interesting when you look at college football, oftentimes you find yourself trying to scheme, have certain different formations. But one of the things that's exciting, or at least unconventional, you know what they're going to do. and the fact that you know what they're going to do and you're still not able to stop them is actually something that's quite exciting to watch. Auburn, of course, they master at running the game and only pass by accident. Shaun White, of course, their quarterback, former Elite 11 MVP, battling a shoulder injury. He did not start the game against Vanderbilt, but he did finish the game against Vanderbilt. So they have a matchup against Georgia. Georgia, you know, the team that almost lost to Kentucky. But nevertheless, so we're going to find out about Auburn. We know what Auburn's going to do. We know what their bread and butter is. But can you stop it? And at this particular point, people are already presuming, predicting, and suggesting that it seems as if it's already going to be a matchup between Auburn and Alabama. But first off, like I said, when you have a team that's predictable, when you have a team that you know what they're going to do schematically, then you know what you need to do to beat them. But do you have the horses? Do you have the will? Do you have the strength? Do you have the willpower to be able to stop those runs in the first half and prevent them from becoming long runs late in the fourth quarter, which, of course, seems to be what has been the formula that not only worked for Auburn when they beat Vanderbilt, but also was the formula that worked for them when they won a national championship with Cam Newton and nearly won a national championship with Nick Marshall. 16 seconds. But nevertheless, however, one team that I have never been a fan of, one team that I always find myself giving a hard time, and I don't know why, is Oklahoma. Oklahoma in the week two playoff rankings find themselves ranked number 11. And I can honestly tell you, when I look at them being ranked number 11, it makes me pose, like, yeah, we know a W is a W. But when you look into that W and you see that that W was against a team in Iowa State that's only 1-8, a team that, of course, found itself at times leading, beating Oklahoma, a game that was not really deciding until late part of the fourth quarter, you say to yourself, yeah, we know Oklahoma is Oklahoma. But is Oklahoma really worthy of being ranked number 11 in the country? But again, as I say in life, as I say in sports, ladies and gentlemen, we're definitely going to see what's happening. And of course, we're definitely going to see what's up. Now, I told you guys that I was going to talk a little bit about retirement. Find a way to intertwine both of these situations and make a point. So let's just jump into it and see how I do. So you work for 30 years. You got your pension. You got your retirement. You got your gold watch. You got enough money to make sure that your kids and grandkids can go to school. You have all your payments now set on automatic payments because those days when you had that entry-level job, you weren't able to do that. You don't have a worry in the world. So you spend your retirement sleeping in, waking up late, going to the golf course, or in my case, possibly going fishing, relaxing. But then, unfortunately, a time comes where that gets kind of boring, where that gets kind of dry, where your friends and colleagues, who, of course, you've worked with for extended periods of time, they're busy. They're at work. Your spouse may be working part-time, and you're just at the house. You may have done a couple of things pro bono just to try to get anyway. But then you find yourself saying, you know what, man, maybe I want to get back into doing my job. Because this lacks life. I've visited all the golf courses. I've improved my score. I'm no longer a handicap. I've actually become a regular at the golf course. I've caught my fair share of fish. Hell, I even went stingray hunting. I've done it all. But something missing. Now, the scenario that I describe in my own honest, earnest opinion is a scenario that I believe is what took place with Jim Grove. After years of sleepless nights, after years of burning the midnight oil, after years of recruiting and going into mama's house and trying to get them, convince them to come to Wake Forest, get an education, and try to build the program, it got tiring. So you retired. You visited the golf courses, which, of course, we do know that Jim Grove is an avid golfer. He also is an avid fisher. You had your fair share. But still got that coaching itch. And then a situation happens where maybe it presents itself an opportunity for you to be able to go back into coaching. And Jim Grove took that opportunity. He said he did it as a friendly favor to a good friend of his in Art Brow, as he took on the interim coach position at Baylor. And unlike most coaches who come into a new environment, you know, they bring in guys who are their own. You know, you bring guys who you've coached with. You bring guys who, of course, helped you mold and build and bolster this gleaming reputation of integrity, character, and, oh, yeah, winning games. But no. No. Jim Groves didn't do that. Jim Groves decided, hey, you know, let's just go ahead and roll with what we got. Let's go ahead and roll with a coaching staff that I have no clue about. I may have seen them in passing at coaching conventions and things of that nature. I may know them only to a degree of a high and by. But let's roll with it. And things seemed to be working smoothly. We knew that there was a big elephant in the room. And that elephant, of course, was all over the program. As Art Briles, of course, found himself getting opportunities to visit the campus, go to the football facilities, attend games. You had this big elephant in the room, this big distraction. And apparently Jim Grove found himself, his niceness and sincerity, his integrity, being truly put to the test. And I really think that Jim Grove has now find himself now in a season, now with Baylor, two losses down, getting embarrassed, daydreaming about retirement again. Daydreaming about being able to get those 8 hours of sleep. Daydreaming about the golf course. Daydreaming about fishing. But I can guarantee you he's damn sure not daydreaming about Baylor. He's damn near not daydreaming about a coaching staff that he actually did a favor for, who at an inopportune moment, at an inopportune time, took that as a chance to stab him in the back. As, of course, the assistant coaches found themselves publicly supporting Art Brow. Now, you can support him. I can understand that. But also you have to understand the ramifications of the situation. You have to understand that by supporting him, either inadvertently or purposely, you're also turning your back on the victims of domestic violence and all that mess that's placed at Baylor. And like I said before, it's only going to get messier. It's only going to get uglier. Because right now, I mean, when you suspend the team's leading rusher, Shaq Lindenwood, not for injuries, but for attitude, that gives you an opportunity to provide a glimpse into what's going on in this program. And what you realize is that the foundation to which this program was built on, or at least attempted to be rebuilt on, was a mess. And I don't know what coach in his right mind would want to find himself stepping into his situation. Jim Grove has already suspended recruiting. Jim Grove is already thinking about retirement again. Jim Grove thought that he was doing a favor for a friend. Jim Grove was sorely, sorely mistaken. And Jim Grove probably already has his bags packed. Jim Grove already has terminated the lease on whatever home or property that he has down in Waco. And Jim Grove probably has already made a couple reservations, make a couple vacation plans. because Jim Grove cannot wait to get the hell out of Waco. And based off of everything that's going on, you have to honestly say, can you blame him? I mean, can you really blame him? But how is this whole situation going to play out? At this particular time, our country is trying to determine who the next president of the United States is, and you have people on both sides, either of who you support, who are painting grim pictures of the other candidate. And either, irregardless of how grim the picture has been painted, we do know that both are far cry from what the reality is going to be. However, unfortunately, with Baylor, the grim picture keeps getting uglier, more distasteful, and more irreprehensible with the passing of each day. And what I truly wonder is how this situation is going to find itself being resolved. You have the Board of Regency and boosters battling it out. You have assistant coaches being tone deaf to the social issues that are taking place on their campus. You have a college football coach in Jim Grove who's now found his pristine reputation a bit tarnished by his willingness or his kindness in regards to trying to do something for a friend. Eventually, we're going to find out who the next president of the United States is, but I truly wonder, when are we going to find a resolution to the problems that are going down in Waco? And how do you go about resolving those problems? Because in 3 to 4 days, the football season is going to be over. And a question that nobody is posing that I truly believe is something that you guys should actually consider is this. Is based off of all the mess that is going down at Waco, if in fact when Baylor makes a bowl game, will a bowl to select them? Will a bowl, a company, of course, who endorses and finances the bowl, want to be associated with Baylor and that mess that's going on down there? But again, as I say in life, as I say in sports, we're definitely going to see what's happening. And of course, definitely going to see what's up. Now, moving on to a happier topic, more exciting, more dynamic topic, is this race for the Heisman. Now, of course, it seems that we have had a front runner since week four of the college football season. And that guy goes by the first name Lamar, last name Jackson, who seems to have leaped to the front of the Heisman race after his actual leap against Syracuse. And it seems as if right now that the country is anxiously scattering, trying to identify who else is going to be invited to New York. Who else is going to be a Heisman finalist? Each week, it seems as if we try on a new potential Heisman candidate like we do a pair of shoes or a suit to see if, in fact, the suit is going to be tailored to match what a Heisman candidate is supposed to be. Thus far, it seems as if everybody's battling for second and third. People, of course, tried on the Jabril Peppers suit, and it was nice. It was dynamic. It was fast. But, you know, the last defensive back to win the Heisman, who came from Michigan, he actually had some interceptions. And although the fumble recovery was good, although him playing 10 positions against an undermanned, undervalued, under-talented team in Michigan State, which is another story, how the hell did Michigan State fall that far? But I go on. We realized that it just really wasn't a good fit. Now, it may be good enough of a fit to get an invite, but who else? I mean, we can't just have two people there, guys and ladies. And so we found ourselves trying on the Jonathan Allen suit. After the Superman hit, the fact that he had 8.5 sacks, then we say, well, let's compare that Superman Jonathan Allen suit to Ndamukong Suh, who had 65 tackles, had 21 tackles for loss, had 11 sacks, and you realize that that was only good enough for a fifth-place finish. So we got to find some other guys to invite. So who are we trying out now? Well, now we're trying out Dante Foreman from Alabama. No, sorry, no disrespect. Dante Foreman from Texas. And Dante Foreman, thus far this season, has been the running back who's actually produced. Throughout this season, we've made excuses for why Christian McCaffrey has not been able to produce. We've made excuses, either justifiable or justifiable excuses, for why Leonard Fournette has not been able to produce. We've dismissed Royce Freeman. We've all but forgot about Nick Chubb. And for some reason, despite all those guys disappointing, we've completely overlooked the fact that there's been a guy down in Texas, y'all, in Dante Foreman, who overlooked with a package deal to Texas because his brother was supposed to be better, his twin brother, who now is the brother of Dante Foreman, and not the other way around. And we realized that we've completely missed the boat on this guy from Texas. 10 consecutive games of rushing for over 100 yards. Last week against Texas Tech, where defense is optional, he ran for 341 yards rushing, was only 9 yards short of breaking Ricky Williams, who won the Heisman. And you say to yourself, does he fit the bill? You look at his stats, you compare him to Mark Ingram. You look at his stats, you compare him to Reggie Bush. You look at his stats, you compare it to Ricky Williams. And you know what's missing? The fact that it's not going to be a 10-win season. The fact that there's not going to be any more premier games for him left to play. And you say to yourself, man, we've been late to the show. We may find ourselves in another Christian McCaffrey situation where the fact that we were not paying attention, we found ourselves focused too much on the running backs that were not producing due to injuries, due to poor play, due to ineffective offensive line play, and we've completely overlooked the fact that Dante Foreman, the twin who was overlooked at Texas, the three-star running back, the guy who's run for 100 yards for 10 consecutive games, the guy who probably is going to run for 100 yards at least for the next remaining schedule for Texas. And we realized, has he fit the bill to get an invite? Has he done enough to at least touch the trophy and get a nice little photo op with Lamar Jackson and Jabril Peppers? Well, as I say in life, as I say in sports, ladies and gentlemen, we may have been late to the party, but you know what? We're going to enjoy it nonetheless. We're definitely going to see what's happening, and, of course, we're definitely going to see what's up. Now, as I bring my show to a close, I want to thank you guys for tuning in to Countdown to Kickoff. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can subscribe to the podcast on Stitcher, there you go. But make sure you listen. Remember, everybody in the world has an opinion. It gives you an opportunity to take a time out from life and all the things that have a tendency of stressing you out. Thank you guys for taking a break with me. And remember to stay tuned to sports. I know I will. Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Countdown to Kickoff. Our show airs live every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If, in fact, you missed the show, make sure you subscribe to the podcast by typing in count and the number 2 and down, one word. While you're at it, make sure you also follow the latest happenings in the world of sport with us at Eat, Drink, Sleep, Sports, and the number 2. And you know what? If you've gone that far, be sure and check out our website for the latest happenings as well at EatDrinkSleepSports.com. Till next time, college sports football fans, stay tuned. I know I will. Peace.